The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of Track Wrestling, joined by a man who verifiably 100% absolutely hates cold weather. That's Andy Hamilton, also of Track Wrestling. Welcome to the cold. You're in it, man.
It's not too bad right now.
It's cool. It's cool weather, which I'm not saying you hate that, but the extreme cold, I gotta say you hate it.
Who likes it, though?
Eskimos.
Do they?
I think so, because they don't know anything different. They live it. It's part of who they are. It's part of their fabric, man.
Take them to Hawaii. See how much they like that. Well, see if they want to go back.
I think they'd struggle there, because it'd be a little too hot for them.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm learning to love it. I get out in it, and it's exhilarating. I think it's a blast, man. I want you to get on that gravy train. Could be pretty cool. He's shaking his head. No, he's not going to do it. But it's still wrestling season. And cold weather in Iowa or any parts of the Midwest where you get that extreme cold means we get to enjoy an indoor sport in wrestling. And we are in the heart of it right now. And we are in the heart of our opportunity to talk about it and elaborate on what's happening right now in college wrestling and beyond. We're going into the 2020 Olympics, so that has changed the dynamic of what we are doing, but we have a little house cleaning we have to do, a couple mailbag items. First comes from a junior high coach who didn't want to be named because of the topic, and we talked about weight cutting. He actually chimed in and said he's not as opposed to weight cutting in junior high as other people might be. Now, he said the youth wrestling, he's against weight cutting, but he said, I was okay with it when I was a junior high coach, if it was 10 pounds or so, because he thought it made the kids tougher. He just felt like if the kid might have a little baby fat on him still going into the junior high level, that cutting down 10 pounds might not be a bad thing for him. So he felt like it was case to case, and he didn't feel like the weight cutting at that level was maybe as big of an issue. So at least we have someone that wanted to chime in a little bit and talk about that topic. Now, the topic that really went extreme was Terry Steiner's comments about freestyle wrestling. And we just saw an absolute polar opposite. We saw some that said, let's go freestyle, which is what Terry Steiner, the head women's coach at USA Wrestling, said. He feels like we need to be on that side of the sport, that everything needs to go to freestyle. And then other people were absolutely in opposition to that, said, no way, don't change it. So we take a topic that Doug Schwab had, and everyone was on the side of no way should kids cut weight at an early age, to freestyle versus folk style. And as we would have expected, Andrew, it was very heated in what people thought about it.
Oh, yeah. This has been polarizing for a while now, right?
It has. But to have someone of Terry Steiner's stature actually say something about it, I think it really lends credibility. And I think it really livened up the debate.
Well, I think it's a testament to how much freestyle has improved since 2013. Because nobody was saying, let's switch to freestyle during the ball draw era.
True.
That was such a disaster.
It was. And that's a great point, because I think it's really shown that people are really on board with the product right now, and they think it's exciting. There's just so many layers to this, because as women's wrestling starts growing and getting into the potential of NCAA sanction, it's going to be freestyle wrestling. And so you're going to have two different styles of the sport kind of competing against each other. And will that make sense? Will fans be able to get behind it? There are those traditionalists that just say, no way, this is what I grew up with. There's no way we should go toward freestyle. It's the product I know. It's going to be a big learning curve. And I don't know if the NCAA even thinks about this. I don't know what they think about and how they're processing information. But from my vantage point, if it's going to change for men, I think it's going to be quite a long ways away. I don't know if it's a possibility, if they would even bring it up, but maybe you would have more insight on that than I would, but I just don't see it happening anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
I just don't see how it's possible. Now, with that being said, though, I think one of the things we have to address here, Andy, is that track wrestling has a ranking system that's based on the end of the year. It's about what you can do for tournament points, which I think is the best and only way you can do it in our sport right now. Because other than the Virginia duels, and if I'm wrong on this, correct me, for Division One, is there a dual meet tournament, a bracketed tournament that comes to the conclusion of a team champion other than the Virginia duels? Of course, there's the South Beach duels, but that's dual meets that you just have that you know beforehand, predetermined competition that you're going to have on the mat. So we're in a different era of the sport. No more national duels. Dual meets have no real purpose other than the individual matchups that you have within the dual meet that could alter rankings. So teams are going all in with your conference tournament and the NCAA championships. And then maybe you sprinkle a tournament in during the season. So let's look at Iowa's schedule. They have dual meets, they have one tournament called Midlands, and then they go to the Big Tens, and then they go to Nationals, and then before that, they have dual meets. That wasn't the case. It used to be Midlands, and then mid-January, you were wrestling the national duels. That's no more. So we have to go all in with the tournament system. Why would you do it any other way? So with the rankings that we have right now, we got some blowback on Virginia Tech.
Virginia Tech fans were losing their minds last week.
But let's go through this. Like, if the dual meet score doesn't lend itself to anything, if you win a dual meet and it doesn't build anything other than it develops great vibes within your program, and hey, that's awesome when you win a dual meet. I still am a big fan of the dual meet concept because as we back up, it was so cool for me to watch the Women's World Cup and see those stars back to back to back to back. That was a great concept. I'm still on board with dual meet concept. I think you are too.
Yeah, well, look at the environments this weekend.
It's been fantastic.
You know, Arizona State and Penn State, 8,500 people crushed Arizona State's record attendance by what, like 3,000 maybe, I think, is what I heard.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
You got a mat storming after the match, after the final match. You know, Iowa State, you had Iowa State's largest home crowd in 20 years.
Right. And so as we say this, I want to make sure it's clear that both Andy and I are fans of the dual meet concept. We would like to see it go in that direction. However, that's not the layout. We keep going away from the dual meet concept more and more all the time. And as a sport, I think that when the NCAA tournament's what matters, you rank based on what matters. And so even with the rankings that are coming up this week, you might see some points drop for certain teams, even though they won a dual meet, and a team that maybe got a big win in the dual meet and lost might move up because of the individual rankings that accumulate the potential team points at the end of the year. To me, that makes sense, and it's the only logical way to go about it because there's just no outlet for what dual meets mean anymore. And so I understand the blowback. You see Virginia Tech winning over Ohio State. You think, gosh, they should move up. But when you have a formula, as track wrestling does, and you enter numbers into that formula, the formula ranks it for you. And I think that's a great concept because we're going based on what might happen at the NCAA championships at the end of the year. Anything you want?
Yeah, well, Virginia Tech, in our 4 years of doing Division I rankings, Virginia Tech is the most extreme case I can remember of a team that was built, that is built really well for duels, that doesn't add up to our formula for tournament scoring because they have seven guys who are ranked between 7th and 20th. There just aren't a lot of points for those spots between 7th and 20th, especially the guys who are ranked outside the top eight. I mean, we're just talking about a point or two here or there. And, you know, whereas you get a school that has a couple guys ranked in the top two or three, and they're going to be in the top 15 with just a couple guys. So it's goofy that a team like Virginia Tech that has three marquee wins over Missouri Northwestern and Ohio State could be ranked below all three in our rankings. But it's the way that it shook out. And I think they're a fantastic dual meet team. You're not going to score very many bonus points against Virginia Tech. You're going to have a hard time winning six matches against them. So it makes them, those two things make them a really tough out in a dual meet setting. But right now, with where they're ranked individually, they just don't have a lot of point scoring firepower based on where they're ranked. Now, good news is for Virginia Tech, they could go out to Vegas and, you know, maybe win one or two matches that they're not supposed to on paper at a couple weights, and all of a sudden they're right back in the top 10.
If there was the national duel still, you could have some credibility on why you might rank teams, because there was an outlet for that. Even if all the teams don't show up, at least you have some sort of semblance of a dual meet concept that culminates in something special. Now it's no longer, and there's been models, and they've tried the bowl series type concept, and everything went away. So now we're just left with the NCAA championships. And I think it's important to bring this up too, Andy, is that we're driven in a big way by the Olympic movement, that our sport has become about six Olympic weight classes. And we see that this year with all of the Olympic red shirts, that when you go to these top programs, it's about the Olympic dream. And it's not necessarily about the dual meet dream of building a great team and winning dual meets at the big level. Now, I think some of the schools like Princeton, I think they get behind that. And I love that. I love that the dual meet concept can still live on and that these dual meets are important. But when you really look at the high level of the sport, it really is driven by that Olympic dream and one of those six weight classes. At this point in college wrestling, those six Olympic weight classes drive a lot of the decisions that get made. And we're seeing that this year, that the reason that Iowa and Penn State, one of those teams absolutely will win the NCAA championship and no other team has a chance is because who would it be? Let's look at the rankings. Like, what other team has a chance of getting up there and winning the NCAA championship? I would weight it as one of those two teams. It's not a knock against any of those other teams. Cornell would have a chance if they didn't redshirt all of those guys. Michigan would have a chance if they did not. But they're going all in on the Olympic dream, and the dual meet results are going to suffer because of it. And I don't think they necessarily care all that much. They're buying into, hey, they're going to have a great team next year and they could win the NCAA championship. And it probably is better for Cornell to redshirt those guys and have Penn State lose a couple of their studs this year and not have them next year. And it gives them a better chance. So there's a lot of gamesmanship that goes on with how you formulate your team, how you can take Olympic redshirts. And I think we're driven by the Olympic movement more than we ever have been.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. I can't remember this many Olympic red shirts in a year. Can't remember too many teams more or less punting on contending for a national championship.
Because a lot of them can't right now.
But to your point, though, Cornell and Michigan, they could be in the mix.
Sure. If they had those guys in, they absolutely would be challenging for the title this year. I don't think there's any question about it, but you also lose some of your superstars this year and guys that you would want to see that could be on the mat competing. And hey, again, hey, Lehigh beats Oklahoma State, and you see it on, if you don't follow it intimately, you think, oh, that's a big upset, but is it really? You don't have Dayton Fix in the lineup. That would change everything. Just one person in the lineup, like a Dayton Fix, could influence so many dual meet results for Oklahoma State this year, and it just changes everything. I'm concerned because I don't want to get away from the dual meet concept. I just don't know how the dual meet concept's going to live on.
Well, we had Bob Bowlesby, Big 12 commissioner, on this show in the spring, was it? Last winter sometime?
Yeah, it was around this time, maybe, wasn't it? Like in January, February type of earlier this year?
Yeah. And he's kind of mystified why we don't. He thinks it's the biggest mistake we're making in the sport, right?
Yeah. Because what's there to get checked into? Because
look at it. Look at it. You know, yeah. we had 8,500 people at Arizona State for that dual meet against Penn State. We had 11,000 in Ames for Iowa, Iowa State. That shows you the popularity of a dual meet, right? I mean, the fact that there's 19,000 plus, and granted, it's a cheaper ticket, but it's also a 90-minute show. You're in and out in 90 minutes. You're not sitting there for an entire day like you are at open tournaments or the conference tournaments or the national tournament. It's just the team concept adds to it. Look at international wrestling right now. You know, we're trying to grow that fan base in the United States at the senior level. We think it's an awesome product. People just haven't latched onto it. Is it because of the lack of a team aspect? I think that's a big part of it. Well, whereas people get behind their schools.
And you don't have to travel that far. If you live in a town, I mean, and like you said, a 90-minute product at 2 hours, and you can go 15-minute drive, or do you want to fly to Kazakhstan and watch 9 days of wrestling?
Like, I enjoyed my flight to Kazakhstan.
It was great.
9 days of wrestling. But
it's, for most people, that's not going to be a reality in any way. And I just think that's the overarching point of this, is that I'm sure this happens for fans. Like, hey, you follow your baseball team or your basketball team, and you like them, and you know the players intimately. You might not know every single player on the other teams, and there's a reason for that, because that's your team and you want to follow it. I just think wrestling needs to be more in tune with that model, and I just want to see us keep that in check and keep getting reminded on why we're doing this. And the one thing I don't want to lose as we go into the Olympic movement is I don't want to see that JV guy that maybe got a couple matches on high school varsity. I want to make sure he still has a great experience, or her.
Yeah.
Is that I don't want to lose that person.
Sure.
Because the sport got so big and we're so worried about the Olympic movement that guy that really learned from the sport and grew in the sport and became the CEO because he looks back at that wrestling. I don't want to lose that person. And I think the dual meet concept in high school especially has a lot of relevance, because it's our team against your team. And that's pretty easy to understand. And I hope we were able to continue to have that, as evidenced by what happened here with Penn State getting beat by Arizona State, which is a segue for you to lay out the numbers. You wrote this fantastic article about the absolute jaw-dropping numbers of Penn State's dual meet streak, 60-match winning streak. Penn State put up some absolutely ridiculous numbers and maybe the most dominant 60-match winning streak in the history of our sport. And you have some numbers to back it up.
So over the course of those 60 duels, Penn State scored 2,132 team points, and their opponents scored 448. That computes to a 35.5 to 7.5 margin on an average dual meet. They had more falls than matches that they lost. They had 143 falls. They lost 122 matches during that streak. They registered a pin in 54 of their 60 duels. They had two duels where they had seven pins. They were actually back-to-back. The last duel of one season and the first of the next. I think they averaged like 2.4 pins per dual meet, which is pretty absurd. They, as I mentioned, they went 478 and 122, and they scored bonus points in 325 of those 478 wins. They surrendered bonus in just 42 of those 122 losses. And maybe the thing that's the most eye-popping number of them all is the fact that over the course of the streak, they went 57-3 at 149 pounds, 157 pounds, 174, and they went 56-4 at 197. So those four weights combined, they went 227-13. And another one that it's kind of hard to believe is there are only four opponents that came within 10 points of them. And there was only one instance where they went 5-5 in matches, and that was the duel with Ohio State that came down to Snyder needing to win at least by major, but Nick Nevels kept him to a regular decision. And so they managed to win that one 19-18. And you think about it, like they've won, they did all this stuff. And there were some, there's a dual meet in there where Suriano lost by injury default, you know, the Oklahoma State duel, and they still won, wound up winning that one 27-13. They had the dual meet against Rutgers where Nolf had to take an injury default. They still won that one fairly handily. So they've faced some adversity. They beat Ohio State with Jason Nolf out and managed to, I think they gave up bonus points in that match and still managed to beat a really tough Ohio State team. So it's incredible, some of the numbers in there. They had six shutouts during the streak, and they held an opponent to three or fewer points 20 times.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Those numbers are just ridiculous. And it's fun when you can look back at a streak and just see what happened and digest those numbers. But when you listen to those numbers and just have you articulate, you just scratch your head and you shake your head and just say, wow, what an amazing era. It's not over by any means. Penn State's still strong. And as we'll break down the Arizona State Penn State match where Arizona State won 19-18, we have Chris Pendleton on the show. He's an assistant coach at Arizona State, but it almost just makes you say, is this a video game? Like these are just video game type numbers because what they were able to do. And then you just look at the talent and then you just look at the streak of semifinal wins and what they did in the NCAA championship finals and the names that came out of it. And just, it just defies logic. And you can't say enough good about what Penn State's been able to do during this era. They just really have taken it to a new level and created a new space in college wrestling, what they've been able to accomplish with some pretty memorable guys. So kudos to those guys on a great 60 match winning streak. Also in the mailbag, of course, another question from me to me is,
love these.
What?
I love these.
Okay. The question is, did you really say track wrestling with Kyle Klingman over in Kazakhstan during one of your takes at the World Championships? And the answer is yes, I did do that. And fortunately that didn't ever make the air, but if we do a highlight reel or low light reel of some of my biggest flubs, that will be probably the crowning achievement on that. Andy was laughing hysterically. I had to step away because I was tired and I was like, what did I just do? And fortunately, none of that was live and nobody got to see it. But I actually did say that. I don't know if you remember that or not.
I do. I remember that well.
You do? Okay.
We should do some outtakes based off the...
A lot of outtakes from that. There are quite a few outtakes, but let me get a few more. Let me just build in a few more flubs so that we can have a really good low light reel. Also, just have to mention that Chris Pendleton, as we said, is on the program. And I'll say this, Andrew, is that I had the wrong number for Chris Pendleton. So I was texting a person about coming on the show and got to say kudos to whoever this person was. They rolled with it. They gave a whole synopsis. I don't know much about wrestling, but I can chime in on some other topics. So it was pretty funny to get the response back from someone who just listed it out. And I got a full breakdown on what this person's doing for Thanksgiving and what they know about. They knew about baseball and basketball, but not much about wrestling. But they're willing to step up and come on the show if they needed to. But
well, maybe we'd get them on.
Yeah. Perhaps, but we do have Chris Pendleton. Unless you have anything else you want to add, we're going to get to our guest.
Yeah, I do have something I want to add.
I'd like to hear it.
I think Arizona State, in the last couple days since they beat Penn State, it's made me reflect on their program and think about where they were 10 years ago. They almost dropped their program.
They did.
They actually did for what, 2 weeks?
Yeah. It was like 2 weeks, and then Art Moratori came in and funded it. But yeah, it was gone for a little while.
And they're a contender. They've been up to as high as third in our rankings. They end Penn State's 60 dual winning streak. As I mentioned a couple times, 8,500 people in the stands. And just a decade ago, that program was on the chopping block. That's really hard for me to wrap my head around.
And they're a very relevant program.
Absolutely.
We're talking about them for so many reasons whether it's Zahid Valencia or Anthony Robles, there's just been a good vibe around the Arizona State program. And
they're on the short list of programs that have won a national title.
They are. Yeah. 1988, they did it without a champ. And Zeke Jones was on that team, and he certainly knows the formula, and it's going to be difficult to get back there, as it is with any team that cracks the code and gets in there, but they did it, and they have a team that you're going to want to watch out for, and
but I think
a fun team to watch.
I think that's a tremendous testament to Art Martori and what he's done for wrestling, and that we still have an Arizona State that's not only fielding a wrestling team, fielding a high-level elite wrestling program.
Because what else is out there? You have those California schools, but Oregon's getting bare. Washington is bare. You have Oregon State. You have Arizona State. And then a nice collection of California teams that are now in D1. But the West Coast is where we need the most college programs.
Absolutely.
So for Arizona State to have a team, and I'll make my plug here, let's get the NCAA championships to Phoenix so Andy can get warm in March.
Tie it all together, Kyle.
Are you in for that? Would you
like I'm on board with that. Okay. I would love that.
So we will put a plug in for that. And
I think I might go spend like the entire month of March down there if we do that.
Just work from Phoenix? That would be awesome. We
get an Airbnb for like a month, go to some spring training games.
Oh, dude, you're talking now. Let's make that happen. Let's get to our guest. Chris Pendleton is our guest. He's coming up next. Our guest today is Arizona State assistant coach Chris Pendleton. He has a pair of NCAA championships that he won at Oklahoma State, one in 2004 and one in 2005. Welcome to the show, Chris. Great to have you on. I always have to do this when you're on the show or I see you in person, is just to rave about your two NCAA championships, because you absolutely dominated through the NCAA tournament. And since I've been watching wrestling, I'd put you as far as back-to-back NCAA championships in the top five of dominant performances. When you go through something like this, take us through your mindset. How did you get so prepared? How did you get so ready to dominate when you won your championships?
Well, I was very fortunate to come into a situation where one of the reasons why I chose Oklahoma State was, John Smith obviously is the GOAT, and everybody knows about his accomplishments and what he does. But I also had Mark Branch, who is, kind of my I had Mark Branch and Pat Smith. They were kind of the guys that really helped develop me and was the day-to-day things. They kind of instilled in me a level of like competitiveness. And why I say they gave me the competitiveness, they also gave me a lot of whoopings too, where in that room, in that era, there wasn't any easy days. It was literally, I had to go with Branch, Pat, Tyron Lewis, Shane Roller, Mark Munoz, Daniel Cormier. It was cutthroat in that room. I remember when I got to Stillwater, I was fifth on the depth chart. And right away, when I saw that I was fifth on the depth chart, it kind of opened my eyes to, this is the big boy league now. It's time to start getting after it. And I got pulled out of red shirt my true freshman year, learned a lot of hard, valuable lessons that stuck with me. And most importantly, is it was very clear to me that no one was bigger than the program, and that the wins and losses would be my responsibility. And it was something that, got instilled in me young in my career. And fortunate enough, I made the right choices, surrounded myself with the right people, and did the right things.
I just want to make sure our listeners understand the scope of this. So let's just break down your two NCAA championships, 19-2 Tech fall, 14-3 fall, and then an 11-4 win over Ben Askren. That was 04. And then in 05 fall, 14-10, 16-1, 16-1, and then 10-5 over Ben Askren. But when we look at that domination, I've heard so many times that Tyrone Lewis, who is the weight class below, was an absolute terror in the room. Pat Smith said on his best day, he could go even with Tyrone Lewis. You describe Tyrone Lewis and what he was like in the wrestling room.
Well, Pat's best day and my best day were two different things. On my best day, I couldn't even come close to him. It was one of those things where I grudgingly just had to accept it, that I wasn't better than Tyrone. And I mean, there was match. There was days that he absolutely would destroy me. And at some point, I just started making like little micro goals for myself. Like, let's just get a takedown. Let's just ride him for a little bit. And the days that I got a takedown, it might have been 10 takedowns to one, but I was puffing out my chest like, hey, I got a takedown, so I'm good. So that, I mean, he seriously is probably the best practice room wrestler I've ever wrestled to this day.
What did he do in practice that was so spectacular? Did he just throw out throws? Did he just hit leg shots? What was it?
No, he literally could do anything. I mean, he could ride you. He was a terror to hold down on bottom. He would throw you. He'd double leg you. He'd ankle pick you. I mean, he could do everything. Even in the matches that, like, he lost to the NCAA with the public would see. I mean, and he lost to Troy Letters. He lost to, you know, a couple different guys. He always would get the first takedown. And in my mind, I would always be like, well, Tyrone, you took the kid down in 15 seconds. I mean, like, that's when everybody's fresh. Everybody's at their best. You could just do it over and over and over. But he had mental blocks that I to this day still think that he never really believed how good he was. And one of the other things that was awesome about him is he never rested on his laurels. He was probably one of the hardest working men I've ever been around. When he would come in, his workouts were just, I mean, he was a bar setter. If I had a workout that he had, I knew I got a lot accomplished in that day.
How about Johnny Hendricks? Did you see the writing on the wall that he would be good, or was he hard to score on early on? What was he like when you were there with him?
Johnny's biggest thing is he had two extraordinary gifts. One, he was probably one of the pound-for-pound strongest guys I've ever wrestled in my life. He was just ungodly strong. He had a natural strength about him. But that wasn't what made him special. What made him special was he had an unwavering belief in himself. I remember me and Zach Esposito were watching some Satya's videos before practice, just kind of like, you know, doing a little technique work. It was something that, you know, we always like to do. And I remember Johnny walked into the film room and he sat there and he's watching and he was like, I could beat that guy. And we were like, you're out of your damn mind. Like, you, there's no way. I mean, this is the best wrestler in the world right now. And Johnny 100% was like, yeah, I could beat him. And I remember laughing, but in my mind, I was like, this crazy SOB might actually be able to do it because he believes he can.
What was it like from your side during that era when they were thinking about getting Mark Perry in there and then he goes to Iowa? Did you want him there? What was the vibe from Oklahoma State side?
You know, it was really a hard situation because Mark's dad actually recruited me to Oklahoma State and I loved Mark Perry Sr. And when we had the transition when he left and Mark Cody came in and then Mark went to Blair and he would always come back in the summertime and train with us. And it was one of those things where like, we all looked at each other because we were all young and around the same age. At the end of the day for Mark to be at Oklahoma State, he would have had to beat out Johnny Hendricks, Tyrone Lewis, or myself for a spot, in the team. And it would have been an uphill battle for him. So I don't hold any bad feelings towards him for going to Iowa. I mean, there's sometimes it's not about, you know, where you want to go. It's where you fit. And it would have been extremely hard for him to make the lineup with the guys we had. We tried to talk him into, I do remember on his recruiting trip, we tried to talk him into going to the OTC for a year. We tried to talk him into that, you know, because it was just going to be a one-year thing that we couldn't really fit everybody in the lineup. And I remember I talked to John a little bit about, well, you know, if I start now while Mark was a senior in high school, I was like, I think I could build into 84s. I mean, I had the frame. I hadn't really hit a growth spurt like I did after college, but one of the things I really wanted was, you know, I was greedy. I wanted the best team that we possibly could have. And I was like, well, you know, if we get Mark in, he can take my spot at 74s. And then I build up to 84s, you know, it probably could work. But selfishly, I was also like, well, do I want to build into a weight class that I don't know if I can actually be as successful as I was? Because at that point, I was walking around about 77, 78. I wasn't a huge weight cutter in the summertime.
Another guy, Zahid Valencia, is on your team right now at Arizona State. You're an assistant coach there. Of course, he's in his senior year, one of the great wrestlers of our generation, watching him compete. When we think about him, compare him to some of the guys you competed against and wrestle with, especially on the Oklahoma State team. What intangibles does he have, and how does he compare with some of the guys we just mentioned?
You know, Zahid would have fit in extremely well on that Oklahoma State team. One, he never shies away from the hard work. He definitely likes to get in there, especially last year. I tell some people, he's done some workouts that I've seen very, very, very few people not only do, but thrive. He's not afraid of challenges. He loves to embrace the moment. He's got a little bit of that Johnny Hendricks swagger about him, that self-belief in himself that his dad, Ruben, installed into him when he was a young age. Technically, he's a little bit of a unicorn. I don't really know. He does have like a Oklahoma State type style with his motion, his level changes, his speed, his outside attack. But he also has his own little wrinkle that he throws in there that, you know, he's a unicorn. I'm very aware of that. With his growth and his development, hasn't really been me doing anything crazy, just kind of just being a mentor and guiding him along the path and letting him find his own way. You know, one of the things that I really respect about him is not only is it his athletic ability, but his mental toughness and what he can do is on a chart with like Johnny Thompson and Johnny Hendricks. With these guys, no matter the situation, no matter the score, no matter who they were wrestling, they just knew that they were better and they could will themselves to win. I knew that he had that his freshman year. We were getting ready to go to Cliff Keene in Vegas. And on Tuesday, he sprained his ankle. And I mean, when I say sprained his ankle, it was huge, like a cantaloupe, a purple. Like Zeke and I looked at each other. It was like, there's no way that he's going to wrestle in Vegas. We were really bummed because it was going to be, you know, a good tournament for him to come out against. We decided that we were just going to take Zahid with us just to get just to see the tournament, just to watch, do a little scouting, be around the team. And the tournament started Friday, Thursday afternoon. We started taking the kids to go get a workout in to get some weight off. And I looked over and he was fully dressed. And I was like, well, what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm going to wrestle. I was like, no, you're not. You're hurt. I mean, you haven't gone live in a couple of days. Like, there's no way you're going to do this. And he looked me dead in the eye and he said, I'm going to get one takedown a match. And that's all I'm going to do. I'm going to get one takedown the match. I'm going to ride hard. I'm going to hand fight. And that's it. He's like, no one can break my defense. And I remember just kind of like chuckling, like, all right, kid, this is a different level. And if you go back and you watch his matches in Vegas, he did it. He actually did it. Yeah, two really good guys. Brian Rubuto from Cornell in the finals. That was one of the guttiest things I've ever seen. He was on one leg, no training, and he got one takedown on Rubuto, broke down into his defense, just got tough, and won the Cliff King. So that right there kind of put into my mind that, hey, this kid, his mental game is off the charts. He can do whatever he wants, whatever he really sets his mind out to do.
Chris, what were the main takeaways from his match with Taylor Venz earlier this year?
The main takeaways is like I said, whatever Zahid sets his mind to do, he can do it. I think it was definitely a good little bit of an eye opener that, hey, you know, even when you have World Olympic aspirations and you're trying to chase down guys like David Taylor or Jaden Cox or, you know, Snyder or whatever weight he ends up at or they end up at, is NCAA wrestling is hard. This is an extremely hard sport. Anybody can be beaten on any given day. There's only been one undefeated wrestler for a reason, because this is hard. And there's a lot of hungry kids that are out there to take him out. You know, Dan Gable didn't see Larry Owens probably coming early in the season, but he got caught up at the end of the year. So it's one of the beautiful things about our sport, that it's a humbling sport and it's an honest sport. So I think that was one thing that really was good, that he had that little bit of early season scare. And when I say scare, I don't really think he was really that worried about losing the match. I think he knew exactly where he was at, what position. But it was just good reminder that, hey, this is not going to be easy. You have to do it. And I shared this story with him, and it's something that I really, really regret in my career, is I would get complacent. And it would drive John bonkers, bonkers. And it would make me resent John Smith a little bit, where I was cruising and dominating and throwing up bonus points. And, you know, some of the other guys on the team would lose. And it was every practice, or it felt like every duel, John would do a breakdown of how the tournament or the duel went. And he would just hold me to this impossible standard that I was like, this is so not fair. Like, you're always picking on me, it felt like. And that was my immaturity. So my last 3 years of college, every semester, I lost one match. I lost my sophomore years in the NCAAs. I lost my junior year in the Big 12 finals. And I lost my senior year in the Bedlam duel. And most of the time it was because I let my ego and I let my hunger die down, where I would get complacent, thinking, all right, I got this. I don't have to cut my weight right. I don't have to warm up properly. I'm going to go out, and just because who I am, I'm going to win this match. And that wasn't the case for me. So it's something that I kind of have been stressing to Zahid, is it doesn't matter who you're wrestling. You take care of yourself at all times and good things will happen.
He bumped up to 184 pounds this year after being at 174. Was part of that just because of the 2020 Olympics and getting him filled in for that weight class?
A little bit. You know, one of the misconceptions about Zahid is that he's a huge weight cutter. He's not. He wasn't. At some point last year, he could walk out of practice about 72, 73. And he just has that. It's just his body, his metabolism. I've never seen somebody that has their weight fluctuate like he did. But, I mean, I got really tired of answering questions about it last year. Like, oh, was it Zahid's weight cut? Was it this or that? He was not a monstrous 74 pounder. In fact, Mark Hall was a lot bigger and a lot heavier than him. He just has a kind of like a swimmer's build that he just looks huge, just with the way his wingspan is and his lats and his legs. He looks huge. This summer, he made a big commitment to the weight room. He got up pretty big, put the work in, and he's excited about trying to chase down the national title at 184. It allows more of our other hammers to kind of fill out into their natural weights and gives us a little bit of more of a balanced team. And at the same time, get the heat on track, because he's got, like I said, high Olympic aspirations. He wants to be the 2020 Olympic gold medalist. And this was a move that would help him, you know, on that path.
You guys just beat Penn State, number one team in the nation, 19-18, in a dual meet over the weekend. What do you do with a big win like that?
You forget about it. You really do forget about it. At the end of the day, this was a dual meet in November. And we got to let it go. Last year we got blanked by them in a dual meet and we let it go. We forgot about it. We went right back to work, and had a pretty good NCAA tournament where we had a champ and a couple All-Americans. And I really want the guys to just forget about it. I mean, this is something that you can talk about 15, 20 years with your family and your friends and everything. But for this season, for this moment right now, you got to forget about it. It just vindicates some of the things that our young guys have done. I'm thinking about like 49s, definitely 25s, 33s, even though we had a loss. It just shows them that you're on that level to compete with these guys and in some cases get the win and beat them. But now let's start worrying about ourselves. One of the things with the Penn State duel is I was looking at the box score. And we pulled one upset off, Cordell Northfleet at 197. That was the only upset we pulled off where we had a lower ranked guy win. So in my mind, it's just one of those things. Like, now I'm looking at, how do we get Shields over the hump? How do we get Anthony Valencia over the hump? How do we get Tanner Hall over the hump? And that's going to come from kind of forgetting about this duel, focusing on ourselves, focusing on how we get better. Like I said, we still have 4 months of preparation and work. Because at the end of the day, the way that the system's set up right now is the NCAA tournament is the end all be all. There's no national duels. There's no, you know, round of cookies for winning a duel. So in my mind, where I'm at, I was, you know, doing some cardio this morning and talking to Shields and Tanner, and I was like, you know, I really expect today to be a hard day, like, you know, knockdown, drug out, blood on the wall kind of day in practice, because I just have seen it too many times. And it's a trap that you can get caught into. Yes, you beat the number one team in the nation. There's nothing better than that. It was a great shot in the arm for our athletic department, for our program, for the kids on the team. But you lose next week and you're right back down low. So what we got to do is we got to make sure that we're staying even keeled. You roll with the wins and losses and you just get back to work.
Chris, you talk about turning the page, but it's probably 8,500 people who are savoring that moment Friday night. What has the buzz been like around the campus and community since Friday night?
It's amazing. People, one of the things that when I got to ASU, it was one of the pleasant surprises that I got, that there's a huge wrestling community and culture out here. And ASU wrestling's been down for the last couple of decades. And it has been a challenge to get the fan base energized again. And luckily, we saw with 8,500 people in attendance, they are energized. I want the fans and the administration and the donors and everybody that has contributed to the program, that win, definitely for them. I want them to celebrate. But for our athletes, we have to understand we're looking at it as a different way. That, and I think it's a little bit of the Oklahoma State in me, where, what did you expect? You know, I mean, you're not supposed to go into a duel expecting to lose. You're supposed to hold yourself to that high standard. And now it's time to turn the page and move on to the next challenge, which is the 15 Open.
How do you get a guy like Anthony Valencia, who's been on the cusp, to make a turnaround, not turnaround, but just make that incremental improvement and be where you think he can be?
Anthony is doing everything that I want him to do. He's getting better and better every time out, and his little daily habits have been increasing. Even that match that got away from him, I went back and I watched the film and I was actually like, Anthony, this wasn't really that bad of a match. You got the first takedown, you almost converted the second takedown, and you gave up a takedown you should have gave up with 3 seconds left in the first period. So for him, this isn't about being perfect. It's about progress, not perfection this year. You're not undefeated. That's fine. We're just going to keep getting back to work. We're going to protect our brains. We're going to listen to the right people. And he's already doing it, where the kid's a winner. He's always been a winner. And if he consistently keeps doing the things the right way, he will win. And I truly believe that. I've seen the improvement. I 100% believe in him. And I think that he's going to get it straightened out. He's right on the verge of it. And let's not slight Mark. You know, Mark is the cream of the crop at 174s right now. He is a 5-time world champion, NCAA champion as a true freshman. And the kid's good. But we're going to keep chasing him down.
You mentioned Norfleet a little bit ago, and he had the big win Friday night with victory against Kyle Cannell. He was really starting to take off at the end of his true freshman year when he won the Pac-12 title, and then certainly injuries set him back last year. Where do you see him in terms of his growth?
He had some setbacks on the injuries, and you know, when he's fully healthy, ready to go, he's a person that I personally don't like wrestling. I don't like wrestling Cordell in the room. Those double legs that he hit on Cannell, I mean, I felt them in my soul because I had them hit on me too. He is a lot better than he believes. And one of the things that I told him that I actually stole from Pat Smith is I just straight told Cordell, I was like, you left a lot of points on that board, on the mat. There was a lot more opportunities to score. He's better than he knows. And as he's slowly starting to, believe, he's in position to take off like a rocket. I mean, this is a kid that not a lot of people talk about that I 100% believe that he can shock the world this year. He can do some things that no one really expects. And I'm excited to watch him continue to develop. I think that he is doing a lot of the things the right way. And generally, when you do things the right way and you have the ability, good things will happen.
What went into your decision to go from Wyoming, where you were an assistant coach under Mark Branch, and go to Arizona State?
You know, one of the things that really played a factor is it was time for me to kind of get out of my comfort zone. Working for Branch was definitely it was a move that I am very fortunate that I made. It was very scary leaving Stillwater to move to Laramie, just because when you're at Oklahoma State, there's the tradition, the history, the infrastructure, everything that's built in there, you just kind of take for granted. And when I got to go to Laramie and I got to see the other side of it, it helped me so much as far as being able to develop athletes, relate to athletes that might not have had or are having the success that I had in college. Because a little bit of it was, you know, well, why aren't you winning? You know, this is you have to. But it started making me realize that there was more to wrestling, about the development of kids, about not making it always about the wins and losses with them, but making it about the development part, like getting better. Are you actually getting better? Because if you're getting better, you're doing things the right way. Those are things that I can actually work with, and those are things that I can kind of accept. And it's something that I carried over here, that mindset to Tempe, and getting outside of the Oklahoma State box, working for Zeke, a guy that, you know, like literally I worked for John and Branch, people that I've known most of my adult life. So it was definitely a difference, like where I'm working for a guy that I had a relationship, but I didn't really know really well. And he started throwing all these different like ideas and tactics and strategies at me, where it made me have to start reevaluating how I'm coaching, how I'm doing it, really put me in uncomfortable positions on purpose, I think, just because it was things that I wasn't ready to do in other places that now I have to do on a daily basis here. The external part. I think Zeke is one of the best planners as far as head coaches in the nation. He definitely has a plan that he believes in, that he follows. And it made me have to start making my own plan. And how would I do things? How would I operate? How do I become a better coach? How do I become a better recruiter? How do I become a better fundraiser? Those kind of things where, you know, the way Zeke might do something and the way John might do something and the way Branch might do something are all completely different and unique. But now I've had the experience of seeing how all three of them do it. And that's helped me influence me on my thought processes on how I would do something.
You'll always be connected with Ben Askren. What's your relationship like with him?
Say it again.
You'll always be connected with Ben Askren. What's your relationship with Ben?
I think we have a good relationship now. You know, it hasn't been the best relationship because naturally we're competitors against each other. And I think, it's been 15, 16 years of answering the same questions about each other. I think he's probably a little sick of me and I'm probably a little sick of him, but it was really funny this year. I've said multiple times, Ben Askren's one of the best people for the sport of wrestling that I've ever seen. You have superstars that sometimes don't live the right lifestyles or don't treat people the right way. When I look at him and Cormier and their volunteering, their time, I mean, these are major stars across the nation. And when I see them at little kids tournaments, working with the next generation of wrestlers, giving back to the sport and not talking about giving back to the sport, but really doing it, I mean, it makes me just respect them so much more. And then a funny story is, he was getting ready to wrestle Jordan Burroughs, he had reached out to the Heat about training. And it was really funny because, you know, I talked to Z and I was like, yeah, I have no problem with, you know, you training with Ben. I mean, you're going to get a wealth of knowledge from him and it's going to definitely help you continue to, on his path of evolving. But they worked out at the US Open and I actually just went to the workout and watched. And it was actually one of the first times I sat down with Ben. Just, we just actually just kind of talked and, you know, this was, it was a good moment where I got to watch, you know, kind of that. It was really funny because I looked at it and I was like, man, this might be the three best 74 pounders of the last 30, 40 years, all sitting there at one workout, kind of working together. So I think we have a good relationship. There's nothing but respect on my end towards him.
When you do have a rival like that, that you are connected to for a period of time, is there resentment? Do you dislike him? How do you compartmentalize someone that's your opponent?
When I competed against him, I obviously just didn't like him because he beat me. At the end of the day, that's what it boiled down to. He beat me. And it was one of those deals where he was a threat. I mean, he was good. Our very first match, his freshman year, he took me to overtime. And at that point, especially his freshman year, I would tell people, this kid's good. Like, he's good. Like, I can't wrestle him. I can't open up. I can't let my offense fly like I like to do. I used to have to really get upset because I would have to wrestle very conservative, very smart, tactical matches where my mindset in college was, I'm going to go out and I'm going to beat you in your best positions just because I believe I'm better than you. I wanted to take your best stuff and beat you at it. And with Ben, I couldn't do it. The match I lost in Big 12, I was a cradler in college. I loved getting cradles. Every time I locked up a cradle with him, I had to mentally tell myself, stop, don't chase the pin, don't chase the fall, get your points, move on. And it would drive me absolutely bonkers. And I remember just like, even like, you know, John would kind of like jump on me about it. Like, why don't you open up? You're better than that kid. And I would have to be like, I don't know, but this kid feels really good. So it was a little bit of vindication on the backside of his junior, senior. I got to tell people like, see, he is good. Now, where's my outstanding wrestler? Yeah, I didn't get bonus in the finals because this kid is really good.
Do you like having a women's program at Arizona State for the RTC?
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Absolutely. I think with what's going on with college athletics, and I can't really talk about it too much, I think there's a sense of entitlement that's kind of creeped in a little bit. But with the women wrestlers, there's just a sense of gratitude. And this sport is a privilege. Anybody that's in D1 or wrestling in college, you are lucky. You are privileged because there's a lot worse things we can be doing in life. I coach a sport that I love. But at the end of the day, it's a sport. I look at people that are doing a lot of different jobs that I don't want to do. And so when I work with the women, I feel that sense of gratitude that they're appreciative of my help. And I can tell you, they want to word it the right way. They fight for every little inch of everything that they get. They honestly do. From Terry Steiner, Clarissa, Jess, Emma, Randall, they always are fighting for every little scrap that they get. And that just makes me so happy to help pitch in and help them. I believe it's the future of our wrestling, and just even having girls in our program, one has made me a better coach. By far, it has made me a better coach. I think a guy like Zahid, I can tell him, hey, go run 15 miles, and he shoots up and he does it. There are sometimes when I am coaching women, they want to understand the process a little bit better. And so that when I'm explaining the process to them, it's helping me understand the process a little better, if that makes sense. And kind of evaluate, why are we doing these things? What's the end game? What's the goal of this workout? For better or for worse. Sometimes it drives them crazy and sometimes it drives me crazy, but it by far has made me a better coach. and just watching them interact with the guys. I can tell you the girls that we've had in this program, from Victoria Anthony, Marley Smith, Kelsey Campbell, Arian Carpio, what they bring to the room is they bring a work ethic and consistency that rubs off on our guys. We've never had an issue with men and women training together. It's worked flawlessly and seamlessly, and it's been a beautiful thing.
Chris, have you spent much time rolling around with Colton Schultz yet?
Just in Greco. I'm 1-0 against him.
You're 1-0 in Greco against him, huh?
I got my takedown. I took off my shoes.
What have you learned about him in the first semester he's been on campus?
Colton's he's a unique dude. His demeanor and how he approaches the sport is a breath of fresh air. He's not that super intense, you know, kind of grind guy. He's laughing, smiling, but he still has that look. When they're going live in practice, he's a competitor. He's got high goals, and he's an animal. He's been a absolute joy to coach, and it's been one of the best part things about the sport. Is I was working on underhook defense for with a couple of other athletes, and I saw Cole kind of sitting there. And I was like, Cole, come here. What do you do on your underhook defense? And he started showing me some Greco techniques, and I was like, wow, that makes complete sense. And that feels great. Like I've been doing this wrong for 20 something years. So he's bringing some new wrinkles in the room. I truly believe we have the best heavyweight room in the country with Colton, Tanner Hall, Mike Kosoy, and Garrett Ryan. I mean, watching those guys scrap every day, it's fun.
It's crazy with all the great athletes that have come through the program and all the great coaches, Bobby Douglas, Zeke Jones has been there, that the guy I think about with Arizona State Wrestling is Art Martori. Explain Art Martori and what he means to the program.
Well, I want to actually put an asterisk on this. I want to say what Art Martori means to American wrestling. The man has been in business for 40 years. He sponsored countless, and I will say actually coach too, countless Olympic gold medalists, NCAA champions. There's literally nothing this man hasn't seen in the sport. And there's a lot of times he advises us on things, and there's very, very, very few times he's wrong. He sometimes can see something from a year out, and he'll say, nah, you shouldn't do that. This is why. And then you kind of go through the motions and you listen to him nodding and you do it anyway. And then he ends up being right. And you're like, dang, I should have listened to him right out of the gate. This man has done incredible things. And every time he talks about wrestling and about why he does it, just kind of opens up my eyes. He feels he's the opposite. He's not entitled. He feels obligated to do what he does because of what wrestling's done for him. And him and his daughter, Kim Matori, they don't have to do this. They don't have to give millions of dollars, talking like high number millions over the course of their lives. They've given that for no other reason but for love of the sport and for what wrestling has done for them. Very, very few people, actually I'm going to say no other person in the history of the United States has done that. He does it and continues to do it, and wants no credit. So a good luck finding Art sitting courtside for one of our matches, or mat side. He's up in the rafters, sitting there with his buddies from his 1960 team, just being a fan. Until I got to ASU, I had always heard the name Art Martori. I had no idea what he looked like. I had no idea who he was. I mean, as far as like just being able to pick him out of a crowd of people. And one of the first times I met him and sat down with him after I got hired, he'll laugh at this story, but he sat me down. And one of the first things he said to me is, he's like, you know, you're Chris. I was hesitant to endorse you for the hire because your career was a disappointment. And I was like, it was like a knife right in my gut. I was like, a disappointment. He's like, you should have been an Olympic gold medalist, but you weren't. And I was like, wow. That's about as blunt and brutal as I've ever had, but I couldn't argue with him because he knows a lot. And it was one of those things where instantly I was like, this guy understands wrestling and he's going to be a straight shooter, for better, for worse, for my feelings or not. He's going to tell me exactly the truth, and that's a rare commodity.
What was your response to him?
I've come to peace with my freestyle career a long time ago. I could have made a lot of excuses, but at the end of the day, I didn't do it, and I have to be honest with myself on why I didn't do it, why I wasn't able to achieve what I wanted to, and pass those lessons on to the next generation of kids.
I think one of the things that you guys really have going for you, something that became apparent to me a couple of years ago being down in Tempe, is incredible support from your administration and a really strong commitment to Olympic sports. Can you speak to what Athletic Director Ray Anderson and his staff have meant to Sun Devil Wrestling?
I literally will challenge any program in the country to have the support from the athletic administration. As far as just watch the NCAA tournament, last year we had three athletic directors. Our head athletic director, Ray Anderson, Scotty Graham, our associate athletic director, and Don Bakke, who Don's been in the business now, I think he's been an admin for 40, 50 years. We had them sitting on the mat during warm-up, watching our guys warm up. And I was looking around like, I've never seen an athletic director alone, three athletic directors during the warm-up. These kids on our team know at any point in time, they can go to any of their offices and sit there and chat with them. Our ADs actually will text our athletes just to check in on them, say, hey, this is going on. And I've had instances before where they'll say, hey, by the way, so-and-so is going through this. You might want to keep an eye on him. I'm like, well, how do you know that he's having, you know, this personal issue? And I don't know. And that just shows the level of commitment that they have in developing the student athletes. Coming from an NFL background, one of the things that they've instilled is life skills and life development. That if I know a lot of people will talk about that stuff, very few people implement it, where they were dealing with the highest of the highest athletes. When you get to the NFL, you are an elite athlete. And what they were doing was they were coming back to the college level and wanted to really make not elite athletes, but elite people. And they've been doing a fantastic job. I don't know if I'll ever have an administration quite like this one, and I'm very fortunate to be a part of it.
Do you know who James Harden is?
Say it again.
Do you know who James Harden is?
Yeah, I've actually lifted weights with James Harden a couple times.
Okay, because Lee Pritz didn't.
Lee and I have different interests in life. I'm one of the few wrestling coaches. I'm a diehard NBA fan, diehard NFL fan. I love watching all the games and doing all that. Just was it 2 weeks ago, the Nets played the Suns here in Phoenix, and the next morning I got up and I went in the weight room to go get my cardio on the treadmill. I'm running on the treadmill for like 2 minutes, and then I see somebody get on the treadmill next to me, and I look over and it was Kyrie Irving, and we're just sitting there running, and then we just started like talking. And I think one of the things that guys like Harden and Irving like doing is they like to come back in this college environment because they can come in and get workouts and no one's bothering them. No one's harassing them for pictures and stuff. But I'm guilty of it too. I'll get a picture with one of those guys every so often, but, yeah, I know who James Harden is.
Well, because Andy got it on record that Lee did not know who James Harden was the first time he met him.
I guess that would be on Lee. There's a 30-foot mural of James Harden right in our office.
What's funny is Lee was telling the story. He's like, yeah, there's that huge mural there, and it was right outside. He was in the hot tub with him. And Lee said, are you still playing? And he says... And then it finally dawned on Lee that, oh, yeah, you're the guy in on the wall about 30 feet, with about 30-foot mural inside. So it's
pretty good. The reigning league MVP that's averaging 40 points a night.
It's got to be fun working with Lee Pritz, though, isn't it?
He's a different cat, man. He's one of the hardest workers I've ever seen.
When you say different cat, you got to elaborate on that because he's a funny dude to me, but I don't work with him. What's it like working with him?
He sets the bar really high. I mean, the guy works from sun up to sundown.
I like that. Hey, we appreciate this interview. It's great having you on. Loved your career as an athlete. It's fun to see what you're doing as an assistant coach at Arizona State. We want to keep seeing you in the sport, and thanks for breaking it down for us, Chris.
All right. Thank you guys for having me on.
All right. That was Chris Pendleton, Arizona State assistant coach, two-time NCAA champion. And we're going to watch Arizona State throughout the rest of the season, Andrew.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun team to follow the rest of the season, see where this win takes them, see what happens to a guy like Cordell Norfleet, if he can carry on the momentum and kind of tap into his upside. And, you know, as we also talked about Anthony Valencia, if he can kind of get over the hump there, and they're going to need those two guys. They're going to need Shields at a pretty tough weight class to pop up there and score some more points. We didn't talk about Josh Maruca in the interview, but he had a big win in that dual meet against Penn State, a guy that, you know, if they can get him going in the right direction again, certainly has ability to score a lot of points. Ja'Cory Teamer, it's a pretty solid lineup up and down. And that race for trophies, it's going to be fun to watch them. We've seen it throughout the first 3 weeks of the season that those teams in about 3 through 7 or 8 have switched order like 2 or 3 times already.
Nice thing about their team is that you got a guy that you can pretty much count on to make the NCAA championship finals. Not saying it's a guarantee by any means, but you have a guy that's proven it. And when you're looking at point value, when you're going to the NCAA championships, it's nice to have that guy you can bank on in Zahid Valencia. And then what do the rest of the guys do with Tanner Hall and Anthony Valencia, Josh Shields? How do they support him? So They're in a good position to get that trophy. That's for sure. And we saw that with that dual meet result. But yeah, I like what Chris said. It's kind of like, hey, you look at the breakdown. You have the forfeit with Zahid at 184. And then 197 is really the only one where they pulled off an upset. And it's maybe not on paper as big of a win. And I think Chris made that apparent. Like, hey, they're forgetting it right now. They're moving on to other things. But when you break it down that way, it maybe isn't as surprising as it might look when you see 19-18, especially when you have a forfeit. So big win, though, nonetheless, for Arizona State, and we'll continue to follow this throughout the season. And glad we got Chris Pendleton on. Great interview with him. As always, for Andrew Hamilton, I am Kyle Klingman. You have been listening to On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to matttalkonline.com.